Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast, where we bring you the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking. Before we get into the episode, it's time for a quick thank you to my supporting partners who help keep the podcast going, as well as bringing you great offers. Hydration is super important, and getting it right has a big bearing on how you feel and perform on a day-to-day basis, but it's not straightforward. For example, too much water can be just as bad as too little. You need to put enough electrolytes into your body too, and everyone sweats at a different rate and loses different amounts of electrolytes within that sweat. It is a minefield. Luckily, Precision Hydration are here to help us get it right. You can visit precisionhydration.com and complete their free online questionnaire that will then give you a recommended hydration plan. Or if you want to take it to the next level, you can book yourself an in-person sweat test where they'll measure your sodium loss without you having to do any exercise at all. And based on that, they'll take you through a tailored plan. They can then supply you with electrolyte products that suit your specific needs. I was sweat tested a couple of weeks back and I've now got my plan and the right electrolytes for me. I've been using them for around a week now. They're super easy to use, they taste great, and I'm definitely feeling less fatigued from my training, which is a result. If you want to find out more, then you can head to precisionhydration.com and complete your own free hydration plan. If you decide you want to try using their range of electrolytes, then as a Downtime listener, you get 20% off using the code Downtime, all in capitals, at the checkout. Next up, it's Komoot, a new route planning and navigation app with a free gift for you all. Komoot is great for planning routes on or off-road. Just give it a start and an endpoint, and Komoot will plan the best route for you. You can also add in any of the community-based highlights like viewpoints and good places for food and drink, and then you can share those routes with your mates so everyone knows where they're going. It's compatible with devices like Wahoo and Garmin, making it super easy to get your routes onto those if you prefer to use them rather than your phone, which I know I do. Komoot will then give you turn-by-turn navigation so you can focus on enjoying the ride rather than working out where you're going. I've been using it on my training rides and it helps me concentrate on putting in full effort rather than working out where I'm going. Komoot are kindly offering Downtime listeners a free regional map bundle of your choice worth $8.99. All you need to do is to head to komoot.com/G, that's Komoot spelled K-O-M-O-O-T, and use the code Downtime, all uppercase, at the checkout. That offer is valid until the end of August 2019, so head over to komoot.com and give it a try for free. Thanks to all of you for your support so far. It means a lot and it really does help the podcast grow. So keep on telling your friends what they're missing out on if they aren't listening. If you've enjoyed an episode, then why not share it on your social media so others can listen to it too? If you want to show your support for the podcast, you can do that by getting yourself something from our webshop, downtimepodcast.com/shop, where we've got t-shirts, hoodies and mugs. While you're on the website, head to the subscribe page and subscribe to the podcast to get every episode delivered as soon as it's available, as well as joining our newsletter to keep up to date with everything podcast related. Also, why not give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Okay, it's time to get into what went on at the Lenzerheide World Cup. Another awesome race with Marin and Amory making a charge towards the overall titles and putting Tracy and Loic under a lot of pressure. A tweaked track offered some line choice and some exciting challenges for the riders, so let's find out what went on. Okay, it's World Cup roundup time again, and I'm joined by Elliot Jackson and Nico Mullally to talk all things Lenzerheide. Elliot, how's it going with you? You're over in Crankworx, yeah?
Yeah, just got over here yesterday. A little bit jet lagged, but yeah, I feel like I'm just living the life right now, so I can't complain.
Very good. And Nico, you're back home as well, yeah?
Yep. Those races where we have the XC, I usually fly home Sunday. So I was at my house at 4 p.m. on Sunday afternoon, which was not bad at all after a European race. So I'm here. That's kind of chilling out until Worlds.
That is pretty impressive. Good stuff. Yeah. So let's start off with you, Elliot, and talk a little bit about the track in Lenzerheide. So they've obviously made some kind of fairly significant changes to it. What were your thoughts when you walked the track, and what was the feedback that you were getting from the riders?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because Lenzerheide is usually, like, you think of it as being really bike parky, kind of like a cross between maybe like Leogang and Leger a bit. Just really fast, like you have to be really precise. And so when I was riding up the lift, I kind of thought it was going to be the same. But walking the track, it also rained a ton. It's the first time, it's rained a little bit in the past, but it really poured early in the week. And I think that helped so much because I like rode up and I was like, oh, it's going to be the same bike parky or whatever. And was walking down and it was really like super technical. So it's like one of the only tracks that has gone from being a bike park track to like made that transition to being a kind of a more downhilly track, like more technical. They changed, like you were saying, they put in this really steep section that took out a couple of bike park turns. They did take out the rock garden up top, which I always hated that rock garden anyway. But yeah, it was good to see. Like, I think they made some changes for Worlds and then made some more changes here. And so it like made it like way more technical and seemed like all the riders really enjoyed it, and it was made it much more interesting. So it was turned out to be a really good track, it seemed like.
Yeah, for sure. So Nico, what were your thoughts on the track? You walked it in some fairly horrible conditions, I think.
Yeah, it was raining really hard on track walk day, and looking back though, that was exactly what we needed. Like, it was almost like when they water a motocross track early in the morning so that it stays wet all afternoon. Having that moisture in the dirt just made the ruts cut in really good first day of practice, and by the end of that first day it was almost perfect. Like, even in the woods it was getting good, and out in the open it just cut into some really nice grooves and made the track roll really fast, and it just helped it. Like, when it's too dry to start with, like a lot of the Euro tracks are in the summer, it just breaks apart and gets worse and gets looser, whereas like having some moisture in it helped the dirt to kind of shape in, and the track actually developed really well. So it was pretty good.
Yeah, and then obviously they've removed the kind of classic rock section. As a rider, what are your thoughts on that? Because I don't know, some people I kind of criticize the choice to move these sections out, because like, is it because they're too dangerous, and surely kind of world-class riders should be able to ride anything. How do you feel about that kind of balance between safety and the spectacle that we all get to see on a Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because I don't think as a rider we really want to ride through that rock garden as fast as we can. But at the same time, it like we're asking for more technical. We want the tracks to have more things that separate between riders. So that's a section for sure where in a 50 meter section, you can gain or lose a second or two. And the way around it was definitely a lot more mellow. Like, there wasn't really much to it in the end. I think they were hoping that it would kind of get gnarlier, but it ended up being pretty one line and simple. So I don't know. I'm glad that I didn't have to ride through it, but at the same time, it's a place where maybe I could have gained an advantage in that section. So yeah, it's a tough balance, but it's just nice to see changes, like just putting fresh sections in. Like, the section around it at least was brand new and totally natural, whereas the rock garden was something that was run for 3 or 4 years in a row. So just to see them change it to make something different and new was really nice. And I was kind of surprised with how many changes they actually made to the course, because this was the last year for the World Cup there. Like, next year it's just cross country, and who knows, in the future maybe they'll come back, but for now they don't have any more World Cup scheduled. So I kind of thought they were not going to do anything to the track, just same as last year, but they actually made a lot of changes, and that was really cool to see. And yeah, like Elliot said, it's one of the only tracks that's gotten more technical every year. Like, last year for Worlds they took out a big section underneath the ski slope, and then this year they took out two of the bike park turns and put in a really steep technical wood section. So they're like taking it off of the grass ski piece and putting it into the woods on natural terrain is really cool to see.
Yeah, definitely. And Elliot, it seems like line choice has been opened up on a few of the tracks this year, and certainly in sections at Lenzerheide. There were, you know, plenty of examples of riders taking different lines actually in the race run, which we haven't seen that much of over the season. Do you think that the taping is a big part of that? Did Lenzerheide do a good job on how they taped it?
Yeah, actually, that's really interesting. I was thinking about this while I was in Linzerheide, because I think there is a, like, the nerd in me, there's this, I think you could like do a little ratio or something, or like count the number of people that stop, and that's a proxy for like how many lines or like how technical a track is. Because like at a track like Leger, like no one stopped, like ever. And not that a track's like, whether you want to say it's easy or hard or whatever, but like you go to Val d'Isol and like people are just stopped everywhere. Like first turn or whatever, as soon as you go into the woods, there's like five dudes there. And then you walk down and there's five more dudes. And then you walk down and there's five more dudes. And like, I think it's more, it's just confusing, you know, like there isn't really one line. Like you can't really say at Val d'Isol, like, okay, I'm going to put my wheels there or whatever, you know, like somebody could be 6 inches over from you and that's totally legitimate, where in Leger or Leogang, like you would be offline and that would be super, you crash or something like that. And it was kind of a little bit in the middle in Linzerheide, where you had some bike parky stuff, but then like you were saying, they taped it really wide. So there were choices, whether or not those choices were good. Like at the top, there was a inside line. There's two of them actually, like a really, really far inside line where you could rail one of the berms, or you could like slow up, go over like some little humps. And then like really, like there was a really sharp downhill into like the regular track. And so people, it just made you have to think about it, where I think by the end, everyone was kind of railing the berm, but it wasn't just straightforward. Like you did have to figure it out. And I think that kind of goes a long way in to like what the riders are thinking about in the early like stages of practice, where like, do I want to, well, like first it's like, what is my personality? Am I the kind of person that likes to rail a turn and just like not really think about it? Am I like more of like a Sam Hill guy who's going to like do something creative? Do I want to look for this other kind of stuff? And then the other piece of it is like, do I care? Like, am I that guy that's going to figure out the line? Or like, do I just kind of ride whatever I'm comfortable with and not really think about it and then let the line develop and then adjust to it? Like, I think after track walk or after time training, like a lot of riders will do track walk, and like, I think you see the most adjustments in line choice, like in that period between like time training and then like qualifying the next day. Like some people like to stay with their lines, but I think like a lot of people will like try lines in time training or break out something they haven't done before. So there was, I think it was a good mix. Like there was some, definitely some like different line choice, and it did, I think tracks do get figured out a bit, and you did see like a lot of people taking the same line in finals, but even still there was like definitely some options around like those big double lines and even in like the more technical sections.
Yeah, from a viewer's perspective, I guess it feels like Val d'Isol, obviously there's a lot of puzzling goes on throughout the week, but from watching it, it's like just looking at it on telly, it seems like most people are on a pretty similar line, and maybe we miss some of the detail there because we can't see exactly what they're doing. But certainly for Linzerheide, it felt like there was a real mixture in that, and you could see that, you know, the lines were very different, so it was quite obvious to the viewer.
I just think like it goes from like not having to think about it to where like the line is there for me in a track like Leger, or like I have to do the work myself to figure out where I'm gonna go. Like in Val d'Isol, like I can't really, even if I'm gonna take the main line, like I have to choose where I'm gonna put my tires in like a 1 foot piece of track. And I think that that's a different layer, like when you get to a track like that, or even like a little bit in Linzerheide, whereas the other ones kind of like choose the line for you.
Yeah. Nico, what was your kind of approach to line selection on a track like this? Because there was obviously quite a lot of stuff to work on, like the steep wood section had some options, the Mitis wall seemed to split people quite a bit, and then a few other like insides that were potentially faster, but kind of hard to work out. How did you go about working your way through which lines you were going to go for?
Yeah, so a few of those sections, there was really kind of just like two line options. And I knew that it would be a little bit dependent on the weather. There was like predicted rain to come in on Sunday. And the first day it was pretty slippery in the beginning of practice and developing as the day went on. So I kind of just got comfortable on both in case it was like pouring during my race run. I could know which line to take. So the kind of like, I guess, three sections where I thought there was a different line was that upper switchback that Elliot was talking about, the really steep new section, and then that wall down at the bottom. And in all those three, I did both lines and was able to have like my dry line and my wet line, so to speak. So it was helpful to have my teammate Jack to ride with in practice, because we were able to like follow each other, and somebody goes inside, somebody goes outside. And even though we had that in that top section that Elliot was talking about, where there's that big inside, we followed each other, and I swore that we were both at the same place that we entered it when we went around the next turn. But I still thought that my line was faster, and Jack still thought that his line was faster, even though we could see, like, I don't know, it was pretty clear to me that we were both like, it was like whichever one you like better at this point. But Jack was like pretty sure that he still thought the inside was faster, and I'm like, no, dude, we were in the same place as we exited the turn. But whatever, I guess it shows like whatever you're comfortable on at that point. Like, even if the other line was faster, if I'm more comfortable to hit this outside line, I should do that because that's going to suit me better. So that's what I ended up going with. And I wasn't quite sure how slippery it was going to be for finals, because it looked pretty bad. Like in our practice, it was still super slick. So I ended up riding like over the wall. I went outside, which is what I rode in practice that morning, because it was a bit slippery. And I think that was a good move. It looked like the dudes that went down the inside, like the top dudes like Amari and that, were kind of struggling with it. Like, it looked pretty sketchy to be able to get through it tight on the inside like that. So I was happy to ride the outside. But I think that there wouldn't have been so many lines if the weather wasn't kind of changing through the weekend and it wasn't so wet the first day, like in that super steep section in the woods. By the time it dried out, it seemed like most people were going down the inside chute. Whereas the first day of practice, there was like three lanes that were open and everybody was riding them all. So having that mixed condition kind of made the line choice even more important.
Yeah, okay, cool. And how did you approach setting your bike up for this track? Because there's a kind of quite a lot of different styles of riding within it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, for sure. There was a couple of like the flatter sections with jumps that you needed to carry speed. And I mean, those were necessary on that mountain. There's a couple of flat spots that you had to get across. And then there was a lot of spots where you needed grip. It was kind of off camber and rooty, and you wanted a bike that was going to get more traction. So to balance that with the need for like a bike that's going to carry good speed and have good support when you pump over those jumps and pedal, it's kind of like two opposite things. So it was definitely tough to set it up. I ended up running a pretty standard bike setup that I've kind of pretty close to what I've been running most of the season. And just because it was kind of slippery out there, I ended up dropping my tire pressure pretty low to try to get some grip on that stuff, but kind of kept the suspension pretty standard.
Okay, so no big changes then in setup, just kind of stuff you've found works for you over the season so far, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess at this point in the season, I'm pretty like comfortable with something that works well. And yeah, the course, I don't think it required too many big changes from some of the other courses, even though there was a lot of options and a few different variable terrain. It really didn't require that crazy of a setup. It was pretty standard, I thought.
Yeah. And it seemed like, obviously, it definitely went well for you, Lenzerheide, this weekend. Were you feeling that in practice? Did you kind of know you were going well straight away?
Yeah, I actually did feel better than I have all year in practice. I'm not really quite sure exactly what it was. Maybe just a bit fed up with some of the performances earlier this year. But I kind of just all week, I was like, all right, it's the last race in Europe. Let's make it count. Let's try to turn things around a little bit and do something good here. So I kind of was like a little bit fired up and motivated to do that going into the race. But I did just feel good on practice day, and it was really nice to be able to put a result to that feeling and kind of quantify that it was, yeah, the feeling was real and feeling good translated to a good race.
Yeah, sweet. We'll talk a bit more about your race in a sec, but we'll start with the women's racing. Elliot, some more exciting racing and down to the line, like Marion Cabarrus, she's on it, right?
Yeah, good grief. Yeah, that was, I feel like there's this dynamic going on between like Tracy and Marine, where Tracy like kind of has like a little bit of a luxury to not have to think about winning races. And like, I think she said that in Val d'Isola, like she's like, oh, like she, cause she got beat by so much. She's like, man, like maybe I need to kind of go back the other way and like actually think about these races rather than just thinking about the overall. I mean, it's nice that she can still do that and get second. But even here, I think there's this, like she has to fight a bit between saying like, okay, do I push and risk crashing or whatever? Or like, do I really just care about the overall? And I think like every time I've talked to her after a race run, like, it's like, you can see that playing out like in the run. Like, I'm sure that comes up in her head, like one of those things where you're like, ooh, that was sketchy. Like, let me back off or whatever. And Marine is like not thinking that at all. Like she's just like, yeah, she's like totally just going for it and like riding really well. And even though this week was really close, like 0.2 is nothing. I think that there's still like a bit of a thing there. And so like Tracy pretty much like has it wrapped up now. But yeah, I think it's like it's definitely an interesting one. Like, do you care about the overall, or do you want to win races? And I think both of them have this totally separate goal where Marine really wants to win. And Tracy is like, I have a chance at winning a World Cup overall. And like, I would be super to not do that. Yeah, it was good to see like Emily get third again, and yeah, like being with Camille, like she got another podium, which was really cool. And also like along the same lines that Nico was saying, with Valley Hole, like she won by like 30 seconds again, but then the week before she got second. And so you're like, I think that's one of the most interesting things for me is everyone on the outside like tries to justify these things. That's like, man, like what did she change? Like what is going on? Like what, you know, why did you do this? Why did you do that? And like, I don't know, like Nico, would you say that you like changed a bunch of stuff going from like 1 week to the next, or like in between this break or whatever? Like,
I'd like to say that I have like a special recipe that I figured out last week, but I really don't. Like I believe I go and do my best every time. And this week I just felt good on track and kind of kept those good vibes going into the race. So yeah, I wouldn't say that I really did that much totally different. I was kind of looking at myself saying, come on, let's have a good finish to the season. Let's start like this weekend and try to turn it around, I guess. So I was maybe a little bit motivated, but no, I guess the answer is like, I didn't change my bike drastically. I didn't change my process. I just put a good race together. I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, I think everybody goes out and does their best every time, and there's not really this big thing maybe that it seems on the outside that you've done something totally different to get a good result.
And so like, how do you deal with that variance? Because like mountain biking and like especially downhill is like so you can have that in during a season. So like, how do you keep your mind, how do you stay with your process when something like that happens?
I don't know. It's definitely tough sometimes. Like when there's a couple races in a row that you're maybe a little bit disappointed with how the results are going, it's tough to just keep doing the same thing, I guess. But the mature racer in me, I guess, knows that, like, even though, I mean, this year the racing has been so tight that a few times I was like 30th place and I wasn't super stoked with that, but my time was actually super close. So I kind of was just like, you know what, we don't need to change a lot. We're going to just everything I'm doing, just keep doing it. If you can do it 1% better, even like that'll make a big difference, and just keep showing up and doing your best. And eventually, you know, like you'll end up on the right side of 1 second, and some of the competitors you're racing against may end up on the wrong side, and you have a big, big swap in position there. So, it's definitely tough when you're a little bit disappointed to keep just doing what you're doing. But if, you know, you look at the results and you say, I'm only a few inches away, I'm not a mile away. You show up every weekend and putting your best, eventually, you know, it's going to come around and go in your favor.
So is it time that you'll look at then to decide whether you feel you need to make a change to the process, or whether the process is good, but it just didn't pan out as well as it, you know, maybe there's some luck or whatever involved in that particular weekend. How do you decide when you actually need to make changes to the process?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's looking at how far you are off the race winner and what the biggest gain that you can make to close that gap. I mean, for me, that's how I look at it. And if there's something like on a certain track, I lost a ton of time in a certain section or in a certain type of riding, or maybe physically I struggled with something, whatever it is, like you figure out how you can, if it's 5 seconds between you and the winner, how are you going to gain the most of that time? And then you can kind of think about structuring your preparation for the next race to focus on those areas. But a lot of times it's really just like not one big thing. It's just a little bit everywhere. And yeah, it's not really, it's tough in the middle of the season with so little turnaround time between races to make big changes. But yeah, I mean, as a rider, just stay focused and positive and motivated. You try to just, yeah, do what you can to strengthen your weaknesses, I guess, between each race. And then looking at the next tracks and what they're going to require of you to try to be as prepared for that as possible. I guess that's how you kind of go race to race and stay motivated and stay competitive.
Yeah. So will there, based on your performance over the last few races and at Lenzerheide, and knowing what you know about Mont St. Anne and Snowshoe, will you make any changes? Is there anything you feel you want to do differently for that last couple of rounds?
Well, I think that those tracks in particular, compared to most of the European tracks, are longer and not quite as steep. So they're pretty rough tracks and physical, but like compared to something like Val d'Isole or Andorra that are physical in that they're so steep and you're on the brakes a lot, and they're really tough on the hands and upper body. The tracks like Mount St. Anne is kind of a similar gradient to like Fort William, where it's pretty long and high speed and rough, but it's not got like a lot of steep braking sections where you're just never off the brakes. And Snowshoe's really similar to that. So that's kind of the terrain that I feel like I'm good at. Like I ride well on those type of tracks. So yeah, I guess just this break, like this late in the season, there's not a whole lot you can do as far as the physical training goes. With only 2 weeks until the Worlds, it's not like you're going to do a lot to physically adapt and make yourself stronger or fitter in that amount of time. So it's more just being well rested and mentally rested and ready to go and have your head in the game. So I'll probably try to do a little bit of riding in between the next two races that are similar kind of terrain to those, you know, flatter, long, rough tracks. And I've got some stuff here at home, luckily, that's pretty good to practice that. So should be good to just get comfortable and that sort of stuff.
Excellent. Good stuff. So let's talk a bit about your Lenzerheide race day then. How much of a gap did you have between morning practice, which you said was pretty slippery, to your race run? And what kind of information are you getting about the condition that the track's in that enables you to set off with the best possible kind of setup and approach to the track?
Yeah, so I race, my start time was like just before 3 o'clock. So practice on race day is 11 to 12. So I had like 2 hours and 45 minutes, I guess, of a gap in between there. And I kind of ate lunch and relaxed a little bit before I went up for my run. And I was able to go and watch Jack race before I went up to warm up at the top. And when he came across the line, I just talked to him for a minute and asked him how it was. And he said it was pretty similar to practice. And going up the lift, it did look like kind of slippery. As I kind of waited for Jack, I watched two or three other riders come down and saw some big crashes actually even in like the bottom section of the trail. So it kind of looked very similar to practice where we had a light rain overnight and the track already being kind of moist from the rain earlier in the week and a little bit hard packed, like just a little bit of moisture on a hard packed dirt and the kind of slick rocks that there are at Lenzerheide made it real greasy. Like if it had poured down rain and got soft, that might have been another thing, but just a little bit of rain on top of a surface like that made it pretty greasy and slick. So I wasn't sure. I thought it was going to be like that again and for my race run. And at the top where we warm up in Lenzerheide is like inside of the lift house, so it's inside a building. And I was up there for the hour before my race, I guess, between when I talked to Jack and when I went out to ride. And I didn't realize that it was drying out as much as it was super foggy up there. Like you could hardly see anything up at the top. So I kind of just thought it was going to be the same, but I guess the fog kind of pushed out towards the bottom of the track. And when I dropped in for my run, I hit the first two turns and I was like, oh, wow, this is actually pretty good. Like the condition's dry. It's pretty much as good as it's been all weekend. I knew it'd probably be still pretty slippery in the woods because it's not like it's kind of dark in the woods there. Like even when the sun was out, it was pretty shadowy to where that's not really going to dry out much. So yeah, I hit the first two turns, thought it was pretty dry, and then carried on after that and felt like I could push a little bit harder than maybe I expected. And but yeah, the woods were still kind of greasy, so I think it was a lot better for the guys at the end of the race. Like I was pretty fortunate to qualify well. I guess I kind of earned that by putting a good quality run in. But a few times this year, I thought that where I didn't qualify great. And then the end of the race, guys were going so much faster. Val d'Isol last weekend was one of them. Like you saw all the guys at the end of the race that did well in qualifying the day before. They all had their best results of the season, and I think that the condition helped them a lot. And then like a few other ones this year, I feel like Maribor was kind of similar. It was drying out during the race day. Fort William, it was a lot less windy for like the last couple guys. Like, I think you saw like Amari go even 3 seconds faster than the guy before him. So it was it just seemed like for some reason this year, like a lot of times it goes the other way where you get a thunderstorm in the afternoon that makes it worse for the last couple guys. This year, a couple times, like more often than not, it was getting better at the end. And I think by qualifying well, you kind of get in that groove where you're at least racing at the same time as the fastest guys. And maybe that motivates you a little bit, but also just being on the more similar course when you're racing an hour and a half before, it might not be quite the same. But when you're racing at the same time as the best dudes, it just puts it in a more realistic condition. And I think that definitely benefited me this weekend. And the more that I can try to do that, the better off it'll be.
Yeah. And you, like you were saying earlier, you put a bit of pressure on yourself for a good result this weekend. How does it feel to come across the line and realize that you've done it? Is it a big weight off your shoulders?
I wouldn't say a weight off my shoulders, but now it makes it a lot more exciting to go to the next two races that was already looking forward to. I thought the track suited me here in North America
and to kind of have some momentum. Just like mentally, when I think about racing and the courses, after doing a good result, it just like adds a little bit of confidence to like push harder and just to be more confident and comfortable on the bike. So just having that result in the back pocket, I guess, makes it really exciting to go and race the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, sweet. It's going to be an exciting end to the season. So Elliot, you got quite a bit of airtime on the live feed. Still, you stood at the bottom of the track chatting to the riders as they'd finished. Who impressed you? What run stood out for you?
Yeah, I felt like there was a couple of people that came down pretty early, like Cade. Cade got 20th, but he came down really, really early. So I thought that was like a really good run. And then like same with, I think like Flo had qualified pretty well, Payet, but, it was good to see him like get a 10th, and same with Dean Lucas. I don't think he came down early, but, he got 7th, which was really cool. Same with Reese Wilson, like 9th. It's good to see a lot of people have like a really good race. I don't know, like everyone works so hard. And you see them come across the line and have a good run, and it's like, man, like, good. Like, happy that you got a good one in. But it was actually crazy because Amari came down, and he was talking to Max Commensal, and he like didn't really look super not upset, but he was just like talking, like kind of going through everything. And I asked Max, I was like, what did he say? And he was like, oh, he said that the top wasn't good and the bottom wasn't good, and or not good, but like there was time there still. And it was funny to see Greg come down, because Greg beat him at the first split, and then he beat him at the fourth and fifth sector, whatever. And it was just like such a wild thing, because I haven't seen that many people. Like Troy came down and he was on the hot seat and he was like, man, like I've never, like what did, he was like, I don't know if these were his exact words, but he was like, man, like what did you guys do? Cause I've never had like a more wild run in my life. Like, he was talking to Gabe, like Canyon team manager, and he was like, man, I thought like that was going to be a winning run.
Wow.
And I think same with Danny. Like, I think Danny had a really good one. And then Lori, on paper, you would say like, oh, he didn't back up his win last week. But I know, like talking to him when he was on the hot seat, he was like, man, like I'm so, he was on there for a little bit. And it looked like he was like maybe going to get a top 10. He was like, yeah, I'm like super stoked on that. Like, I'm just so exhausted. Because one of the things, I don't think this was what it was because of. I think like Valdisol and just like whatever, it just was gnarly. But, you know, you win and then it gets exponentially harder to like do well again, because like everyone was kind of chilling out and riding and stuff like that during the beginning of the week. And I know Lori had like at least 2 or 3 like Red Bull interviews during like when he first got there. And not that that's, you know, whatever, but it is just an interesting thing. So it's like it kind of throws you out, like where normally you'd be like, oh, I'm gonna go for a quick spin or whatever, and then now you have to go and do some interviews. Not that that's hard physically, but just adds like an extra layer of stuff that you have to think about, and I think pressure and stuff. So yeah, it was like definitely an interesting race. And I feel like Loic too, like when he in qualifying he came down and got whatever he got, 2nd or 3rd, and I was like, man, like you're just so consistent. Like, and he was like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm happy that I'm consistent, but it is like, I don't know, it's just funny to see him like 3rd. Like he's like Troy, but on another level right now, where it's like instead of being like top 5 every time, he's like top 3 every time. So yeah, it was a really interesting race. And I think for me, I guess I remember kind of thinking that when Aaron was doing that in 2012 or whatever, getting those like crazy runs. And even though Amari isn't beating people by that much, I think some of his runs, like this one, were just like really impressive. Like Leger and like this, it was just like, it's really gnarly to be beating people when they have like really good runs.
Yeah, to hear people like Troy Brosnan saying he thought that was a winning run, and then for him again to get 2 seconds put into him by Amari's, it's pretty insane, isn't it? And good to see Greg back up there. Like he's been, you know, working his way back up all season. But that at one point I thought he was going to win that. Fastest man in the two lower splits on the track. I think the only person I saw in his race run taking that super high line coming out of the Mitas wall up onto the bank before the turn. That seemed to work pretty well for him. But yeah. Impressive stuff.
Eh? It's funny because the thing that I have found just like being, I feel like maybe like a fly on the wall or whatever, like kind of being out of the bubble that you're in as an athlete, because you have to be, is it's so much down to like how people are feeling that week. And it never, ever, ever fails where like somebody will be in a good mood. You'll see them smiling and whatever, like they'll be having fun on the track and then they end up doing well. And like, it was the same in Val d'Isol. Like Greg was super happy, super upbeat or whatever. And like, he probably would have got second there. And then like same with this week, like you can just see when things are clicking. And I don't know how you, it's like the chicken and egg problem, you know, like you're happy because stuff is, I don't know, you're just feeling it and whatever. So like, I don't know how you like tap into that, because you would just be like, oh, you should just be like happy every week and you'll do well. And it's like, well, it's not really, I think the one comes before the other, but it is crazy that it's, I think it shows like how much the mental part of it plays into downhill. Like the more I watch and kind of just, you know, take everything in, the more I'm like, man, this is literally like 70%, 80% mental, you know? Like, I think there's like the different levels of people, like the guys in the top 10, for them to, you know, win and stuff like that. There's like a really, like the mental component. And I think like once you get into the different kind of tiers or whatever, like going from a, you know, a 15th to a fifth or third or whatever is not, there's not much there. And as a rider, I think it can feel like a lifetime and feel like you're really far away. But kind of like Nico was saying, it's like, if you look at the time, it's like, man, it's like I was a second off and that's actually nothing. So it is. It's been like really interesting to see that.
So has that percentage gone up in your opinion from where you were kind of before you started doing the work for Red Bull? Now that you're kind of seeing
it, I think so for sure. Like I think it's just so not easy. It's so not logical. I feel like you can. As I've done more work and like looked at it and like been on the track and been around and just having interacted with everyone on such a regular basis, like I would have thought when I was racing that I should, that there was a lot of, what's the right word? Like concrete things that I could do to increase my result.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, like I'm a little bit off. Like I need to increase my like technique a little bit here, or like my fitness is a little bit off and my bike is a little bit off here, or like my lines or whatever. And like, for sure, all that stuff does matter, but it's just not, it's not that easy, right? Like that would be really nice if like you could just go and, you know, get a little bit more fit, like make your bike perfect and whatever, and then you just go out and win every race. Like that would be the easiest part, because then all it would take is like doing an extra hour of work. But that's not what it is. And I think as an athlete, it's it's unsettling that that's not what it is, because it's like less tangible and it's less, it's hard to have a clear goal.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of like the really top guys, I think a lot of times in an athlete, you don't think about that being a skill. It's like, how well can I know myself, and how well can I, like Nico was saying, like as he's matured, he knows that he doesn't need to change his process all the time. And I felt like that with Nina Hoffman. She didn't, she like was doing well. She's her own person, like having these wild runs, just having the time of her life, like seeing her after Leger, even, or not after Leger, after Andorra, like her shoe fell off and whatever. Like she was so stoked and whatever. And then she got kind of hurt after that race and was kind of doing her own thing, not really pushing too hard, just kind of trying to get back into it. And everyone, you hear so many people being like, oh, she just pushes way too hard. She's like, she needs to just stay on her bike. And she was, I was having a conversation with her and she was like, yeah, everyone has been telling me like, you're like being too wild and whatever. And so from the outside, it's like, it's logical, right? Like you'd be like, oh, if you didn't push as hard, you wouldn't crash. And then you would get a result. Maybe it's not a win, but then you could build off of that and then you'll win eventually. And it's like, yeah, that would be great if it were that easy, but it's not. And like, you should just keep doing, like, if that's what she wants to do, and it's like push like that, and that's how she rides, and that's what makes racing fun, then like keep doing that. And maybe you crash a couple times, but you'll figure it out. And so, yeah, it's just like it's a funny one. And it makes me like appreciate everything even more, like how hard the sport really is and how hard like performing, I guess, at anything is.
I think to speak a little bit to Elliot's point too, it's really hard as an athlete to ride a different pace than your race pace. Like if you go into a run and think like, I'm going to ride at 95%, or I'm going to ride this section at 80%. It's really tough to like actually manage that. And I find that in my racing that I've like made way more mistakes and ridden much more poorly trying to ride like that than when you're just racing the track as fast as you can with like respect to sections where you need to, something's gnarly and you need to be even more focused or precise. But not to think like I'm going to go slower through there or be more careful. Like when you start to have those thoughts go through your brain, you like start having to process things while you're riding. And the best riding I've ever done is when like you're not processing, you're just like racing and reacting. And I don't know, it's tough to think about too many things when you're trying to race. Like it's almost easier just to like go as fast as you can.
Yeah.
That's the flow state thing that people talk about then, I guess, which is amazing when you get into it, but super hard to access.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's just like only, I think it's even like the words, like for, I know for me, like people talk about like being in the flow state and it's like, oh, I came down and I like didn't remember, like I blacked out or whatever, you know, like I don't remember any of the run. And I think even that like it's different for everyone. Like for me, my best runs, like I could account like every single detail of the runs, because like that's what it meant for me to have a good run, was just like, you know, like pure execution, you know. It's like, okay, like I hit this and like doing this, boom, boom, boom. And then like for some people it's like the total opposite, where it's just like totally your subconscious takes over or whatever. And so I think that it kind of goes back to like, even something like that is totally individual. And you can't say like, oh, I'm just gonna turn off my brain or whatever, you know, because for you, maybe it's the opposite, to where you need to like be fully engaged to do something. Whereas like somebody else is just like, there's like a funny, I don't know if it's in one of his helmet cams, but you hear like Danny in the starting hut, where he's like, come on, Danny, don't mess this up. Come on. You know what I mean? If I did that, I would be like, oh my God, like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, super challenging stuff. Yeah, amazing. And the, and everyone's got another big kind of mental hurdle to get over now, I guess, in the way that the rest of the season's structured. So we've got World Champs coming up next. There's going to be plenty of people going for the stripes. Last year's winners, or certainly in the men's field anyway, Loic wanting to defend those stripes. But they've also got this overall battle that they're fighting for. How do people process that? Any thoughts on how those riders will deal with that? Because there's a big risk of losing the overall if they roll the dice and get it wrong at World Champs, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's really just going to be hard for four people, and that's the first and second in the men's and the women's race. Like, for them, they're the ones that have something to lose if they take too much risk at Worlds. But I think for everybody else, it's just, it's World Champs. They're all in, like, normal, and trying to get the best result they can at that race with, not much really concern at the moment for the World Cup final. I mean, they're going to focus on that when the time comes, but... I think it's going to be real tough for someone like Loic, who is in this really tough spot, defending his world championship title and leading the World Cup overall. I think if anybody can deal with that, he can, but it's definitely a challenging spot to be.
Yeah. So do you think we'll see winners coming from kind of outside the top few riders in the overall then? Because maybe those riders all, whether they want to or not, end up kind of backing it out slightly?
Maybe. I mean, I feel like Loic in the past has had nothing to lose at this race, and that maybe has been something that's helped him. But in saying that, like, he won St. Anne last year. He's obviously riding insanely well right now. But I wonder if he'll have that extra gear for World Champs that he normally does, with knowing that he's got this, he's won that, I guess, three times in the lead and once as a junior, so he's won that four times now, and he's not yet won an overall, which is super important to him. So that'll be tough, but I mean, kind of like I said, when you the best racing you can do is just racing as fast as you can, I'm sure he's going to put his absolute best run together, and whatever happens there. But maybe other riders, guys that are regulars on the podium but aren't competing for the win, like Amari and Loic, will have another level that they can get on for this race. So they might be able to step it up a little bit more than normal.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think, Elliot? It's a tricky one to work out, yeah?
I totally agree with Nico. Like, it seems like talking to a couple of people, you kind of shift your mindset a bit to where it's like, okay, my season not over, but like, I'm not going to win the overall. So it's like, okay, my season's over. And all I care about is like, I have like a chance at redemption here for World Champs. So you do have, like, I think some of those dudes who are not fighting for their overall being like, this is my chance to make something happen and get a championship or whatever. So I think it's hard to deal with those two things, kind of like what Tracy is dealing with Marine, where it's like, I want to win a race, but I want to win the overall. And so, like Nico was saying with Amari and Loic, it's like, I want to win World Champs, but like, I want to win the overall. And does that play in? Like, I think it's just so... hard. I think Amari is really good at that, where he's like kind of like Marine, where he's just like, oh, I'm just gonna go. Like in Leger, where I think everyone that I talked to that watched his helmet cam there was like, my god, like I was not doing that. I'm interested to see how everything goes, but it does like add another layer for those top couple people.
Yeah, and there's a few really dangerous people coming back then, because we've got Aaron Gwynn coming back from injury and Martin Mays coming back from serving his ban and kind of focusing on World Champs. What do you reckon those boys can do?
I think for Aaron, it's really motivating for him to have a goal. that he's working towards. At a lot of the races this year, like being around him, he either came in with a nagging injury or picked one up over the course of the weekend that really made it tough for him to feel like he was getting in the start gate 100% and being able to race these guys. And now I think taking the decision to wait these two, he could have raced these past two, but it would have been a really tight turnaround from he separated his shoulder in Val Nord. So taking the time he needed to really train specifically for Worlds and have a goal that he's working towards every day, I think gives him a lot of motivation. And I think we'll see Aaron come back at his best. It'll definitely be a little bit tougher for him not to have raced the past really much at all this year, to know what the pace is with these guys. And when you're racing every weekend, you know, you can pick something up here and there and get in your groove, and he's going to have to come right in and be at his best if he wants to win, which is obviously the goal for him. So I'm excited for him, and I think he's definitely got a great shot at it, but it's going to be a lot of guys that have a great shot at it, probably 5 or 10 guys that have a great shot at it. And then I bet it's similar for Martin Mays, to where he's had some time to really think about this and train specifically for it, which I don't think we've seen him train specifically for a downhill race before. I haven't really heard much myself other than what you guys have just said, that he's focused on coming back for it. But if that is the case and he's got the chance to train for this downhill race, I think it'll be, it'll be good. I don't know how the course will suit him. It's pretty fast and wide open. And I feel like just coming from enduro and the races that he's done well at are races that he's had to be more precise on the course. I feel like Mount San isn't really that much of a fitness course. Like, it's definitely rough and long, but there's a lot of spots where you're going so fast down the ski slope, kind of just tucked. You almost have a chance to take a rest, where maybe his fitness won't be as much of an advantage on that track as it would on others. I just wonder if how he's going to do. Like, it's definitely a big question mark. I don't think that if we think about the top contenders, he would be naturally my top pick, but there's nothing to say that he can't be. Like, he's definitely got second last year by 0.2 seconds, and he's not really a downhill rider. He just kind of came in and did a couple races last year, so if he's got a chance to train for it, it's going to be exciting to see what he can do.
Yeah, it's going to be a hell of a race. And does anyone know if Tani's coming back? Elliot, have you seen her around and about in Whistler? Do we know if she's back for Worlds?
I have no idea, actually. I saw on Instagram that she was riding, but can't remember what she said, that if she was going to try to come back for Worlds or not. I would think.
Yeah, I think she said that was her goal, but I don't know how it's going.
Yeah, I would think if she's riding now, then she would at least go, like, you know.
Yeah, cool. Be interesting to see how she gets on, and be good to spice up that battle between Maureen and Tracy. And yeah, there's still a few other girls in there that could be dangerous. So yeah, should be exciting racing in all the categories. All right, we'll wrap it up there and let you guys get away. Thanks again for your time. And yeah, I'm super excited for World Champs. I think it's going to be a pretty special weekend. So looking forward to watching it and then chatting with you guys afterwards.
Yeah, for sure. Should be great.
I know, yeah, I'll be watching it. Worlds is like the only race that Red Bull doesn't go to, so I won't be there, so I'll be like have the same perspective as all you guys.
Ah, interesting. So you're into the armchair athlete vibe with me then.
Yeah, for sure.
Sweet.
If I was there,
I would have done that. Sweet.
Yeah, totally.
Good stuff. Well, enjoy Crankworx, Elliot, and Nico, good luck with training and riding between now and World Champs, and look forward to seeing how you get Sweet. On.
All right. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. That's it for our Lenzerheide post-race show with Elliot and Nico. I hope you enjoyed listening. Thanks again to Komoot and Precision Hydration for supporting the podcast. And don't forget, they've both got great listener offers for you. Head to komoot.com/G. That's Komoot spelled K-O-M-O-O-T. And use the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals, to get a free regional map bundle of your choice worth $8.99. You can head to precisionhydration.com to learn more about your specific hydration needs and for your free hydration plan. To get 20% off all Precision Hydration products, just use the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals, at the checkout. Both those links are over on our website, downtimepodcast.com, in the show notes for this episode. If you're still listening, then give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to help support the podcast and get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, get out and ride.